Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? Who's there? What's going on?
You're listening to our number two in the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I've ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
Hey, welcome back. Hour number two to the Tom Abraham Show, live from the Athens studio, Cumulus Broadcasting. That's right. They let me out of my cage at the Big Dog Production Studios, and I'm here in Athens at the studio there, and it was part of the bet. You know, I had to pay off my bet. I don't know why this isn't like a bad thing. You know, I mean, other than me having to drive down here to do it, I don't know why this is a deal. Had lunch at Dreamland, picked up the tab on that. That was part of the bet as well. The only thing that's bad about this whole deal is that I'm pounding this rap music or something. Is it rap or crap? Is it crap music or rap music? I think it's rap, but it's kind of crappy to me. I don't know. I mean, I have a very wide, you know, musical taste. It goes all the way from Skinner to like Molly Hatchet, the Allman Brothers, Marshall Tucker Band. What else could you want? I spent a little time with Kevin Rogers, VegasInsider.com. K. Raj, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
I'm going to talk to you again.
I mean, what else is there, right? A little Skinner, a little Molly Hatchet, a little Pure Prairie League, a little Marshall Tucker Band. I mean, you know, you don't need to venture into much more than that, right? New music.
If you're stuck in that era, then I guess that's what
I'm
you got.
Stuck. I'm stuck in the 70s, my friend. What can I tell you? I'm stuck. I guess that's part of the deal. Hey, what do you make all this that's going on with the NBA leading up to the draft? I mean, this is crazy. You know, the guy trades and guys wanting to make moves. And then, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers dumping their GM 2 days before the draft. I mean, who's picking for them? You? I mean, this is crazy.
Well, the NBA is turning into the NFL. We're trying to stay relevant year-round, which I can't really blame them on. They have more storylines in the offseason than during the regular season, and especially after this horrible postseason, they need anything to kind of keep them going. And, you know, the situation in Cleveland, they're desperate. They really are, I believe, that they see that last year they got a break with the Draymond Green suspension and then winning the final three. And now Kevin Durant going to Golden State, they look unbeatable. So they need to do anything they can to try to match Golden State. If it doesn't work out, then I'm sure that team's going to be broken up because LeBron will go elsewhere. LeBron got his championship in Cleveland, so I think that he could just bail and it's fine because he got them the championship. But I think they see now that it's pretty futile going against Golden State with what they have now.
Would if you add Paul George and you delete Kevin Love, have they really gotten that much better?
No, I don't see where it's that big of a difference. I mean, maybe now they're the one instead of the two. I still think they probably would have been the one if they would have tried a little bit more and they would have overcome Boston as the top seed in the East. But besides that, I don't think Paul George solely is the answer because Paul George is not on the Kevin Durant level. I mean, not to say that they would have to add like a Russell Westbrook and a James Harden with LeBron and Kyrie or some kind of combination or even, I'll put it to you this way, if they had, you know, realistically, like LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kyrie, and maybe like a Paul George, then I'd say, okay, maybe there's a chance there. You just got, you know, a lot of these guys that could score, but just Paul George in for Kevin Love, I don't think is enough.
Yeah. Kevin Rogers with us, VegasInsider.com, and a guy that will keep you on the straight and narrow when it comes to baseball. And speaking of baseball, I mean, we just saw the kid out at Los Angeles hit a home run yesterday, hit two of them, 20 and 21, which now makes him, I think he passed the record that just Gary Sanchez had achieved last year in terms of quickest one to 20 home runs in Major League Baseball history. Have you heard this story about the ball being juiced, possibly, that they've been testing and there was a bunch of independent tests done and everything else, and now they're saying, talking about the possibility that the ball is actually juiced?
I haven't really seen much about it. I mean, I don't know if the pitching has just gotten worse in baseball, or just there, you know, more of these guys can hit home runs, or what it is. But I don't really think it's a bad thing for baseball. I don't really think we need 2-1 games anymore. If these guys are all going to hit home runs, then it just improves the game. I mean, obviously, Scooter Jeanette hitting 4 home runs in a game for the Reds is a little bit questionable. Mm-hmm. That just goes to show you that, you know, it's just random. Anybody can throw a no-hitter. Anybody can hit 4 home runs in a game, you know, just one time. But I don't think people would say, well, I'm not watching baseball anymore because the ball is juiced. I don't want that. You know, I can't watch it like that anymore. You know, you need scoring in football. You need scoring in basketball. You need scoring in baseball. If these guys are going to do it, then keep it going.
It says in the story that I'm reading here, it says this is from a publication called The Ringer. It said that the experiment found that a batch of balls from 2016, as compared with those from the first half of 2015, had a higher coefficient of restitution. Read, they were bouncier, as well as having lower seams and a smaller circumference. The ball's actually a little bit smaller, less lower seams. The cumulative effect of these factors in the new balls are estimated to travel 7 feet further, which is the physics equivalent of an extra 1.4 mile an hour of exit speed off the bat. So they're saying that these balls are wound tighter, they're smaller, they're like golf balls. And I'm with you. If that means that, the only thing I worry about is a guy getting killed. You know, it's these 120 mile an hour balls coming off a guy's bats and everything. When is a pitcher going to get killed? That's what I would worry about.
Yeah, I mean, how much of a difference does it make now as opposed to when we saw, like, you know, Willie Blair or some of these other players that took line drives back to the head? It's dangerous. It's very, very dangerous. And I mean, look, Mr. Wizard, with all the physics and all this other stuff, I mean, I don't really know how much it's really hurting baseball. So I think we should just, you know, they'll keep doing those tests if they want to, but I don't think the game is suffering.
On the front of making sports gambling legal across the board, not just in Vegas, it was interesting, too, that this came out this past week, that NFL APA executive George Atala saying that the four leagues in professional sports have been working together already to discuss the potential challenges using how overseas sports leagues handle the issues with gambling as case studies. He says that they have been discussing it, and it's almost as if they're kind of getting ready for this to happen. And one AFC owner told Monday Morning Quarterback back in March, from a gambling standpoint, it's a joke to say that would be a problem. That was an issue decades ago. Now sports gambling is going to be legal. We might as well embrace it and become part of the solution rather than fight it. It's at everyone's best interest for it to be above board. Man, it seems like we're getting closer and closer to this happening, to where it'll be, you know, sports gambling will be illegal, you know, across the board.
Yeah, well, I mean, you hope that that is the case, just because you know that all of these people, there's a thirst for it out there, and there's no reason to think why we have to wait and wait and wait, and it's not legal, it shouldn't be legal, because why? You know, there's really no good answers except for it feels like, you know, we're living in the old days. We're living in the 50s and the 60s, and, you know, you gamble in these back rooms, or you meet a guy with a brown paper bag in an alley somewhere. And we just need to get past all of that, that there's nothing wrong with it. There's not going to be fixes, like all that stuff. These guys make too much money. So, you know, I just think that they need to get this thing hopefully resolved in the next few years and just accept it for what it is. That for Roger Goodell to think that that gambling doesn't drive the NFL, he's nuts.
Yeah.
You know, and we talk about this so many times. Take away gambling, take away fantasy football. Do you really think there's that many diehard fans left? I really don't think so. I think there is a number, obviously, but you know, you have a big audience out there that gambles in the games, that plays fantasy football. If those two things went away, you're not going to have as much popularity in that sport.
Now, I was telling you, too, about that book I read about the underbelly of daily fantasy sports. And if there's anything, ultimately, when this story is finally written that moved this along, it would be that. And when you read that book, it was written by a guy from the Wall Street Journal. And, I mean, it's amazing the seedy underside of daily fantasy sports. About the whole thing basically was based on pros with computers that didn't know if the ball was blown up or stuffed, running numbers and taking advantage of fish. Sharks taking advantage of fish in all of these games where they would put in 500, you know, different lineups to take advantage of people. And that when they ran into each other, like every once in a while you'd have these guys that are quote-unquote pros that would run into each other. They were apologetic. Like, oh, geez, I didn't mean to go against you. You know, it was crazy. The whole thing was funded by a bunch of people with a dollar and a dream, and it was just such a small group of people getting rich on it. So much worse than just betting on a game.
Yeah, and I've read that, you know, you have all these whales, you know, as you call them, playing these fantasy sports, the daily fantasy, and they have all these different combinations and just destroying, you know, the common person. And everyone that wants to play thinks it's fun, end up losing to somebody who's a pro. And like for something like that, I'm not really into daily fantasy sports, and I understand the idea of it. But at the same time, though, you know, that's just unfortunate that you go against someone like that who, where you have no chance to win. And obviously, they always say, oh, well, the house normally wins when you're betting on a sporting event. But at the same time, though, you know, you're going against the, you know, these odds makers. But then it ends right there, as opposed to someone who, in a sense, has the answer that is beating you every single time in daily fantasy.
Yeah, just with numbers and algorithms. See, when you tell me why you like the Yankees over the Angels tonight, for example, you talk about the pitching matchup, you talk about the trends, you talk about injuries. You know the sport. You know you're making a decision based on what's going on in the sport. Whereas these guys, they're strictly crunching numbers and pumping them into a computer and looking at algorithms that come up with 400 or 500 different lineups that they put $100 a piece on, and they'll spend $5,000, $8,000, whatever that night, with the percentages on their side that they'll win 60% of their matchups and take all the money from these little guys that are only betting, you know, putting in one or two or three different fantasy teams. They don't know anything about the game. And that's, you know, when I talk to a handicapper like you, you're telling me why you think a particular team or quarterback or a running back is going to have a good game against another team, and that's why I say it takes all the fun out of it when you look at it like that. I mean, hell, I can play the stock market and look at graphs and trends.
Yeah, it's not as fun when you have that thing that you think that you have an advantage and you don't have the advantage because somebody's playing all of these, and, you know, they have all these combinations where, I mean, for me personally, you know, I was never into the whole, you know, you see, oh, there were 50,000 simulations of this game, and it says so-and-so. I mean, what if somebody gets hurt? Tom Brady got hurt in the first play or the first series years ago, and he tore his ACL against the Chiefs in the opening week of the season. Like, how do you prepare for that? How do you prepare for a player getting ejected? You know, his first at bat, there's a pitch that's on the outside corner, and it's called strike three. He doesn't like it. He gets thrown out of the game. You know, how do you can't go for that. I mean, yes, I know you can say injury, but, you know, at the same time, there's a great defensive play. Maybe it's a base hit that, you know, that always stunned me in baseball. I mean, football and basketball, it's easier to play the matchups and say, well, you know, football, this wide receiver is playing the 29th-ranked defense, so he's going to light them up. But, you know, when I look at baseball, you know, it always goes back to this, Tom, which is something that people, you know, rarely talk about. Oh, so-and-so is a 30-game hitting streak. Well, you can have an infield hit in 30 straight games.
Right.
Just like you could be 0-for-9 against a pitcher. Maybe if you went 0-for-9 with 9 strikeouts is one thing. I can go 0-for-9 against you, and all 9 of those outs, I can hit to the warning track and can be caught, but I still didn't get a hit.
Right.
So, you know, people kind of forget that. I mean, I know it's kind of, you know, off topic, but, you know, that's where I was wondering with the baseball, where you're not facing the same pitcher all 4 times, you know, or however many times you back, you're going to face a reliever somewhere down the line, and you just have all these other factors. That's what always kind of stunned me, is how you can be so successful in these daily fantasy sports with all those factors, as opposed to, oh, I'm going to take LeBron or Durant in the NBA in fantasy where you know they're going to light it up.
Yeah, well, I think in baseball it's because, though, of the percentages. Eventually, because it's a numbers game, the percentages, if you put in enough different lineups, the percentages will even out. Those hard hit balls and those bleeding liners that end up being hits, and you know the smash that you hit to the third baseman, and all of that. If you get enough different lineups, all of that will average out, and you'll beat most of the people. And that's all you have to do is beat most of the people. Kevin Rogers with us, VegasInsider.com. All right, let's talk about what's going on the field. Let's start with the Cleveland Indians, who have apparently served notice that they, in fact, are the team to beat in the Central. And I wonder if they'll ever spend another day out of first place now that they've gotten this little roll going here. 7-3 in our last 10. Minnesota's lost 7 out of 10. Kansas City is starting to win some baseball games, playing good ball. But you almost it seemed like now that the Cleveland Indians have reached this point that they may never look back.
That was a very big series this past weekend against Minnesota. Corey Kluber was great against Baltimore last night in that shutout. And, you know, now we're seeing Cleveland turn the corner a bit. And when you have a Cy Young winner healthy, that's going to happen. And, you know, once the offense gets going, which it has, I think we're all waiting for Minnesota to fade out eventually. And the Twins have still been a good story this year. I'm not ready to close the book on them. But I think that over 162 games, it's asking a lot. You're not going to have Irvin Santana as a Cy Young candidate. He's not Chris Sale. You know, he's not some of these other pitchers, a Corey Kluber, a Keuchel. You know, he's not one of those guys that can keep us up a whole season. He's a decent pitcher, but he's not that. And you need a guy like a Corey Kluber to be on top of your rotation. Now, as far as the rest of the division goes, you know, obviously the White Sox, you know, are way behind. Detroit is underachieved. And then you look at the Royals, who you mentioned, coming off a great end of the road trip against the Padres, the Giants, and the Angels. They beat the Red Sox last night. They got Chris Sale tonight as a big home underdog. That all of a sudden now the Royals, who it seemed like you could stick a fork in them a while ago, and maybe they'd be trading off their team before the deadline, and now they're getting it together. Their offense is really kind of found their bats. The problem is, I look at their starting pitching that, you know, past a Jason Vargas, who's pitched very well for them, that I don't know how much faith I really have in the rest of their rotation. But at the same time, Ian Kennedy has got to turn around sooner or later. You know, his numbers, win-loss numbers aren't good, but his overall numbers aren't terrible. But the Royals at least getting those bats going is a good thing, and they're getting back to .500. So we'll see if they could be some kind of threat, if not the division, maybe a wild card.
In the East, the American League, Boston playing better baseball, but the Yankees coming back to the pack with a terrible, terrible West Coast swing, getting swept by the Oakland A's, losing a series to California Angels, Anaheim, whatever you want to call them. And now, you know, they come back home. The Yankees were 22-9. They start a series tonight against Anaheim. But having said that, just a couple of games ahead in the loss column of Boston, half a game ahead in the standings, and you wonder if that thing is about to flip-flop now with all these injuries piling up for New York.
Yeah, it was a really tough swing there. They came back in that first game against Oakland, and then they end up losing an extra innings and just, you know, several one-run losses there to an A's team, which has been kind of all over the place this year, that they've had some good home series, and on the road, they've been a bit of a disaster. But, you know, for the Yankees, you had to expect them to cool off somewhere down the line. And, you know, obviously Tanaka's not the pitcher that he was. Severino got knocked around a little bit. And now for the Yankees coming back home, they had the Angels for a few games. Still Mike Trout is out. That the Yankees, you know, you would hope that they would not turn this into a substantial losing stretch, that they would go, you know, 3-12 or something like that, that they can avoid that, kind of get back on track here. And you mentioned the Red Sox are coming off that series against Houston where they won the finale, even though they ended up losing last night in Kansas City. Now we'll see if Chris Sale can get back on track. And obviously, the big question with the Red Sox is, will David Price get back on track? And, you know, Price pitched well on Sunday night, but we'll see how consistent that he stays. Toronto's gotten back in the race a bit. Baltimore really fell apart, even though I know they had a nice series against St. Louis this past weekend after getting destroyed in the opener. They won the final two games against the Cardinals, and they got blown out by the Indians last night. But for Baltimore, I said this to you so many times, that the starting pitching, there's no faith in that starting pitching at all.
Right.
And Chris Davis is hurt. You know, Machado was banged up a little bit. But the Orioles are going to end up probably being, you know, that third or fourth place team. Tampa Bay had a really bad loss to the Reds last night at home. But, you know, this American League East, I wonder when it's all said and done, if it's just going to be Boston like we expected, or if the Yankees can keep it up. The Yankees have been a really good story this year, but they really can't afford one of these big losing stretches moving ahead with the way the Red Sox are playing.
Another week passes, and the Cubs are still behind Milwaukee. Just a game and a half, tied, though, in the loss column. And you wonder, when you look at those standings, do you even look at Milwaukee, or are you looking at the Cubs' lead that they have maybe on St. Louis or Pittsburgh? They're about 3.5 games ahead of those guys. You wonder still when they're going to kick it into gear. They're a 500 team the last couple of weeks. They're a 500 team all season long. And it seems like at any moment in time here, they're going to overtake Milwaukee.
You know, we're just waiting for them. You know, they ended up winning the final game against Pittsburgh. They came back to beat San Diego last night. And maybe Jake Arrieta isn't the pitcher we thought. I mean, I kind of feel like Jake Arrieta and Rick Porcello were two guys that won Cy Youngs and now kind of faded out a little bit, that they were just like one-hit wonders in those seasons. But, you know, for the Cubs, again, we're waiting. And with Milwaukee not really being, I kind of feel like Milwaukee is like a Minnesota that, you know, eventually they're going to taper off. The Cardinals have been so inconsistent all year. We know the Reds aren't very good. The Pirates have underachieved again. That, you know, for the Cubs, are they finally going to just get that winning streak? And, you know, we talked about Cleveland before, that Cleveland's finally getting it together at the right time. When will the Cubs get it together at the right time? That both of them are in similar situations, going to the World Series last year, both in mediocre divisions. That can they finally just get that winning streak going? And you would think playing the Padres, a team that actually swept them at Petco Park, you know, earlier in the season, that you would think that they would kind of come back here and play better. But, you know, they got to win last night. Now we'll see if they can do it again tonight.
Always excellent work. Kevin Rogers has been our guest. VegasInsider.com is where you'll find him. He's rolling again in baseball. He'll take care of you and help you all make a couple of shekels with him. That's Kevin Rogers, VegasInsider.com. Okay, Raj, appreciate you, man.
All right, Tom. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. All right, let's get a break. When we come back, David Moulton will join us. It's our countdown to Hoover. 7 shows to go, including this one, before we show up in Hoover. That's right, because we've got a week off coming up in the middle of all of that. So we'll talk to David Moulton next of Sirius XM Radio and the SEC on CBS. We'll do that right after this on 730-1039. The Ump.
Call 866-485-9867 to get your bark on. Here he is, the head of the household, the big dog, Tom Abraham.
All right. All right, I gotta explain something here. Because our next guest is a guy that's known me for 16 years. We did radio together way back in the day. He was doing an afternoon show. I was doing a morning show. And he knows a little bit about me. And if he's paying any attention at all to the music, he's like, what in the hell? Big Dog's using rap? I mean, what is up with that? This, for those of you just jumping in on the show, this is part of the bet I lost back during March Madness, okay? Today is the day I'm paying off the bet. I fed the morning show crew over at Dreamland Barbecue. I am now broadcasting from their studio in Athens, Alabama, and I had to use their music, okay? So just if you're wondering where Skynyrd and Molly Hatchet and you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan are, they'll be back tomorrow, okay? But right now, I'm having to roll their stuff, all right? I needed to say that because David Moulton is a guy that goes back with me, and he's probably think I lost my mind. I don't know if that was Lil Wayne or Tupac Biggie or, you know, I don't know who these people are. But in any event, I know who David Moulton is. He is with Sirius XM Radio. He is also with the SEC on CBS, part of their broadcast crew, behind the scenes, and help us tell us a little bit about how the sausage is made there. David, welcome to the show. How are you?
You know, Big Dog, when I was listening, it sounded like rap with a little Gilligan's Island mixed in. Honestly, play it again and tell me if the middle rhythm
yeah.
doesn't sound like the theme from Gilligan's Island.
I don't. I've never heard it before. What they're playing, they're just saying, "Oh, you got." You might be familiar with Colt Kublik, the former Auburn lineman. He does ESPN games and SEC Network. Cole is our morning show guy, and he and I go back to other stations that we work together on, and so on. And so we had a running bet going, and Cole plays all of that stuff in the morning, and of course I use Southern Rock in the afternoon. And sure. when I lost the bet, which I seem to do a lot these days, but when I lost the bet, I had to use his music. So I don't know what any of that stuff is. If it's post, like, I go back to the modern stuff, like, you know, mid-80s. I mean, you know, like 38 Special.
The modern stuff like the mid-80s.
Yeah, if it's like past 38 Special, I don't even know what it is. I don't know who these people are. I
know. Once MC Hammer's prime days came and went, you were done.
Done.
I get it.
Absolutely done. No question about it. All right. I want to get into a couple of things. By the way, for those of you that are just jumping in, this is part of our countdown to Hoover. Just 7 shows left before we go to SEC Media Days. That's because I have a week off between now and then. Phil Steele earlier and David Moulton now. Each and every day we're bringing you a different guest from our normal guests to talk a little SEC football. Because as you know, David, you know, football in the South begins July 10th with the SEC Media Days in Hoover, Alabama, where we'll be holed up for 3 days in the hallway.
Well, you know, there was a lie told that in Texas there's 2 seasons. There's football and there's spring football. Mm-hmm. And pretty much I have found out now, spending 18 years in the South, that it's not just the state of Texas. It applies for every state due east of Texas as well.
Right. I mean, there's no question about it. And, you know, it was funny because I had this conversation with one of our big bosses earlier today, and he's like, and he's new, you know, to us, and he's like, well, why don't we just take the feed from one of our sister stations and we'll just like have the same thing on all of our I said, no, you don't understand. I mean, if we're not there, you know, it's just there's no cred, man. There's no street cred. We got to be there to hear the same thing that everybody else is saying on every other station and talk to all the same people. But it's no, it's good. And I don't know if you've been to Hoover yet, but what all it is a convention. It's an SEC media football convention.
Yeah,
and it serves
it's
a purpose.
Super Bowl media days cut, you know, by like, you know, it's 15% of Super Bowl media day. Some years it's about 25% of Super Bowl.
Well, it's just an opportunity for all of us to get together. There's no news that comes out. More news comes out of Destin. Last month there was news in Destin. There's no news with this. It's just all of us get together and we say hip hip hooray, let's get going, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's a combination hype and propaganda week.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly, and I always get to sit down and talk with your buddy Gary Danielson there. So let's start there because I want you to pull the curtain back for us a little bit. For those of you who don't know, for some, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years, how long have you been working with Gary on the SEC on CBS?
We've done 11 years together. This will be year 12.
That's amazing. So for 11 years, you're the guy that's just off to Gary Danielson's side, and tell us how the sausage is made. Are you handing him notes that are statistical things? Are you handing him notes as to, you know, a slice of life type things when a particular player, you know, what is it that you're feeding him? What kind of knowledge that we know that comes from you and your angle that you're looking at the game on?
All right. There are 5 people in the booth, essentially. The play-by-play guy, which for, you know, a great many years was Vern Lundquist. Now, full-time, it'll be Brad Nessler. Brad has 2 people who help him. He has a guy immediately. Actually, Brad does a little differently. He puts a guy in between himself and Gary. He's got a guy to his right who's his numbers guy, if you will. He's the one who points to who has the ball, who made the tackle, that sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a guy to Brad's left who does all the stats, you know, 4-yard gain, punt was 39 yards, return of 12. So that's who is helping Brad. I'm to Gary's right, and Gary's not a huge stats guy because Brad, usually the play-by-play guy, takes care of that. But Gary's obviously, as an analyst, has to be the insightful guy. So, you know, I point out certain things like, you know, that looked like 12 men on the field or – you know, anything that could have happened, you know, that just a lot of times when you're watching a game live, it's actually harder than watching it on television.
Mm-hmm.
How many times people listening have been sitting in their living rooms going, how could the announcers not see that? Well, it's because a lot of times when you watch a game live, you follow the ball.
Right.
Well, the camera takes you places and more intimately than your own set of eyes can take you. Plus, also, the play-by-play guy and the analyst are getting three different replays thrown at them. They got two people talking in their ears. And so sometimes they miss things.
Right.
So my job is just to be an extra set of eyes. You know, like Gary as a quarterback, the way he does a game is he watches the safety. The safety tells him what the coverage is going to be pre-snap. And then usually the safety can take him to the ball if need be. So, you know, Gary does a game a little differently than most. And my job is just be an extra set of eyes and ears and point out some things. And also to listen to him. Like if he says something in the first quarter that, hey, I think this is going to be a key, to remind him late third quarter, hey, you said this an hour and a half ago. Has it turned out to be a key?
Mm-hmm. All right, so and you guys obviously travel together a lot of times, so you have a lot of time together, you know, going into a game. Will you talk shop then? Will you kind of strategize then? Will you, you know, based on whatever conversations that, that he's had or you have had with coaches, will you say, look, it's something I want you to really kind of keep an eye on is the footwork of the left tackle because he's got a turned ankle and I want to know whether or not he's getting beat, you know, off the snap and things like that. Do you go in with like a little list of things that you're looking for?
Yeah, Gary has simplified it over the years. He'll usually give me three things to just keep an eye on at the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Tom, you know, I mean, you've done a lot of play-by-play. You go into a game thinking that these are the keys and this is how it's going to play out. And one of the reasons why we love sports so much is that, well, any damn thing can happen. And
right.
That could turn out not to be the keys. And the underdog can jump out to a 17-0 lead. I mean, you know, that's why we love sports so much. But Gary likes to keep it simple. He does his own board. He does his own notes. He'll have me look a few things up during the week, and I'll email them to him, and then he'll say, hey, these are the three things I want you to start out watching at the beginning of the game. Okay. And then the game just kind of unfolds. And you know Gary. He's a nooks and crannies guy.
Right.
He likes to slice the meat really thin. He believes in pressure points. He believes in an injury at center, in which the freshman second-string guy who hasn't played but eight snaps coming in, and now all of a sudden the other team puts their best defensive lineman on top of the center, and they start to break down that team's offensive line. You know, Gary believes that that stuff is very, very important. So
yeah.
We slice a game pretty thin.
Yeah, that's good stuff right there. And I know when I did when I first got out of coaching and I did color on TV for 4 years up north with the Empire Sports Network and with Nesson, I had a guy that traveled with me that was an ex-coach, and he would hand me notes like, you know, eighth straight running play or little things like that that you kind of lose track of when you're just doing the game play by play by play. And it was always good to kind of have that kind of information. Do you actually spot for him at all, or does it not? Does he not get into that so much in terms of, you know, pointing to the guy that made the tackle?
I'll help out with a replay,
mm-hmm.
You know, because oftentimes there's a replay monitor next to the live game monitor, and I may get a look at the replay a split second before he does.
Yeah.
So I may be able to point out, you know, if you got three wide receivers lined up on the right side, sometimes you don't know if it's the guy in the middle or it was the guy closest to the end.
Right.
So I may just point out, you know, point to the receiver, and then also point to the DB he was going against. 90% of the time, he sees it and he knows it. I'm just there for insurance.
David Moulton with us, the SEC on CBS and Sirius XM Radio. Now, I know you do golf, too. You're not the one, though, that handed Joe Buck the card with the wrong girlfriend's name on it, right? I mean, that wasn't you.
I was not, but I do stand immediately to Joe's right during Fox's golf coverage, and it was funny. There were two cards that were handed to him. One was handed to him by someone else, and another card was handed to him by me. My card said that Brooks Koepka is the fourth Florida State Seminole to win a major, and I listed the other three.
Yeah. Not as interesting of that be as who the girlfriend was, though. That's a more interesting note, I think.
Well, I understand that, but my point is that somebody else had handed him a card about his girlfriend who – on that card said she's a former Florida State soccer player.
Mm.
So Joe took the two cards and put them together. you know, and it turned out, thankfully for me, my card was right. And, you know, I'll get to continue to work with Joe
next week
at the Senior Open.
Is that a fireable offense? I mean, if you're the one that handed him the card, I mean, you don't have to tell a name or anything like that, but does that get you jammed? Because that was a major, major faux pas.
Well, it's unfortunate, you know, because we did 30 hours, 40 hours of live coverage. Mm-hmm. We did 8 hours that day. And the only thing anybody's talking about is we got the winner's girlfriend's name wrong. And so, you know, is it a fireable offense? I don't think it is. You know, I thought Joe told a funny story yesterday about, you know, he did a baseball game with Tony Womack in which Womack was hugging a woman after the game. And, you know, he said to Womack, you know, who's that beautiful woman next to you? Is that your mom? And he said, no, it's my wife.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, and I mean, we've all had gaffes. It's just in this day and age, Tom, you can't have them because, well, then you're pond scum.
I will say this about the coverage. I love the tracer, the shot tracer. I sometimes think that Fox has a few too many voices, a little bit tripping over each other, because, you know, and they don't do as many tournaments, certainly. But I thought Paul Azinger was outstanding with his brutal honesty. And it was a exchange between him and Brad Faxton on, I think, Friday, maybe it was Saturday, about the we. You know, one of the golfers had said we, and basically Zinger was like, you know what, that's just crap. You know what I mean? He basically was saying, that's crap. He's the one that's got to make the putt. He's the one that can't sleep tonight, not we. And I thought that was great TV, that Zinger was so brutally honest there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, Fox got off to a bad start with the Open at Chambers Bay, and it doesn't seem as if anybody's willing to let them get up off the deck and breathe. People are just kind of kneeling on their throats and saying, we're just going to stay here until you guys choke.
Yeah.
Because Zinger has been brutally honest. I mean, I don't think Fox got enough credit, Tom, for what they did last year during the Dustin Johnson controversy. They put the tweets of Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and of Ricky Fowler up on the screen.
Yeah.
In which those three guys obliterated the USGA. Now, would CBS have done that at the Masters of the PGA?
No.
Please. Would NBC have done that about the Open Championship? Hell no.
Right.
Fox did it, and it's what everybody was thinking. And they can't get any credit for anything they do.
Well, it's definitely a different – everything about it is different. I mean, even the bump music. I mean, you know, I use Southern Rock. I heard a couple – I heard a little bit of Southern Rock and the bump music. I'm like,
wow. We played the Allman Brothers.
The Allman Brothers, yeah. It was like they're playing the Allman Brothers for bumping golf. I mean, wow, that's cool. You know, so that was something different. David Moulton with us. All right. You're keenly aware of the Florida program because of you being based in the state of Florida, of course, and do a number of those games with CBS. I am having a hard time getting my arms around the whole Malik Zaire thing. I don't think you bring a guy like that in unless he's going to get an honest-to-God chance to become the quarterback there. I thought they really liked Felipe Franks. I don't see why they go with another basic, you know, rent-a-quarterback. They still have a rent-a-quarterback in Luke Del Rio, who's played for every team in the country, it seems like. Did this move surprise you, and do you expect Malik Zaire to be the quarterback at Florida?
It didn't surprise me for this reason. You know, Tom, our paths cross two or three times a year, and they usually cross at an Alabama game. Mm-hmm. And they have crossed the last 2 years at the SEC championship game. And what has been the biggest difference between the two programs?
Well, clearly
Florida
quarterback.
Florida doesn't have any talent on offense. Mm-hmm. Forget depth. They don't have talent. You know, Florida's defense and Alabama's defenses were comparable. And both times, Florida's defenses got run down because their offense couldn't even get a first down to give them a chance. So, I mean, look at Florida's quarterback situation. I look at Florida's quarterback situation like a bad NFL team, Tom. You're a Browns fan. You keep drafting quarterbacks till you get one right. If I'm Jim McElwain, I keep bringing in quarterbacks and wide receivers till I find a group that can play. My question, though, much like what you just pointed out, you know, Malik Zaire's thrown for 800 yards in his college career, and he was just a backup on a 4-8 team. He's not the savior. He may just be a better answer than what they've had recently.
It just doesn't seem to be that if you want to develop, you got a guy you could have it. behind center for 3 years in Franks, unless they really don't think he looked that good. And even Kyle Trask looked good. But Franks looked great in spring. I wonder if this is an indictment a little bit on the young guys that they got to think that they've got to go get another guy. Plus, Del Rio is still there.
Yeah, but Tom, remember in 2011, John Brantley gets hurt, and Florida had two freshmen backing him up in Driscoll and Brissett, mm-hmm. who both turned out to be fine college quarterbacks, just not at Florida, because they got thrown to the Wolves in 2011 and essentially got broken. I think that's also part of why a veteran coming in. I mean, Del Rio's not the answer. So if there was another quarterback out there who's at least taken a snap, I think McElwain's of the philosophy of, I don't know if I want my number one and two quarterbacks to be two guys who have never taken a college snap.
All right, if I give you my vote for the preseason SEC East champion, and I'm down to Georgia and Florida, which I think everybody will be, make the case for each. Who would you want me to vote? If I was voting proxy of your vote, who do you think it would be in the East? Everybody's going to vote Alabama in the West. Are we looking at rematch number three, or are we looking at Georgia and Alabama epic rematch from a few years ago?
Yeah, I'm looking at Georgia, to be honest with you. Tennessee's going to play a big role, though, because they play both teams early. So can both Florida and Georgia beat Tennessee early in the season? The Gators get them at home. Georgia's got to go to Knoxville. But I think Georgia's, second year of Kirby. Kirby's recruiting better than McElwain, I believe. Lost a lot on defense, did Florida. Georgia's better at quarterback. I think I would take Georgia.
David Moulton has been our guest. You can catch him on Sirius XM. Sometimes he's on College Football Nation. Sometimes he's on the Mad Dog Radio channel as well. And you find him in a lot of different places as well. David, let's do this some more this year, man. Let's have some fun this year with some SEC. I know I'll run into you a few times at some big SEC games this year, but let's do this.
Can you just do me a favor, whether it's on air or off?
Yeah.
Could you listen to that bump music again? I'm telling you, for about 20 seconds, I was humming along going, Gilligan and Skipper 2. Just listen to it again.
I'm going to do that. I'm looking over at my producer right now, which I don't usually look at because I'm normally in the Big Dog Production Studios, and I've been dragged down to Alabama to do the show here from the studio. So I'm getting to look him right in the eye, and he's going to pull it up for me, and we're going to check that out. We're going to let the listeners decide too whether or not you're on the money
great.
With it.
Well, I'm sure they'll conclude I'm an idiot, but the way I heard it.
Hey, average white 50-year-old men. Trying to break down, Snoop Dogg, Chopper, or whatever the hell they call
them. Come on. I've at least listened to the genre past MC Hammer now.
You are. You're tragically hip. Compared to me, you're much more hip because you hung out with younger guys and stuff. And me, I make my young guys, they don't even know. I got guys in here, David, with me right now that were not alive when most of the music that I bump with was on the radio. I mean, not alive. My producer, I asked him, I said, what's your earliest sports memory? He told me the Music City Miracle. I said, the Music City Miracle happened like 20 minutes ago. I mean, the Music City Miracle, wasn't that like 4 years ago? That's his earliest sports memory was the Music City Miracle. Dave, you and I are gotten old, man.
And you can look at all of them straight in the face and say, I have T-shirts older than all of them.
Oh, no question. I'm wearing socks right now that are older than this guy. But that's all right. They do a wonderful job. All right, man. Appreciate you.
All right. Be good.
All right. Thank you. David Moulton. It's good stuff. All right. Let's snag a break. Can we hear that bump when we come back? Can you cue that up for me? Cue that up for me. I want to hear that when we come back and see if I hear Gilligan's Island in that. Was it Ice Cube or Iceberg? Who was that? Was it Glacier? Who was it? What's the other guy? Ice Cube and Ice Tea?
Ice Tea, yeah.
Ice Tea, Ice Coffee, Ice Cube. Was it Tupac to Snoop, or who was it that was in it?
We'll give you all that when we
okay.
Queue up.
All right. When we come back, we'll find out what that was that we were listening to. It's the Tom Abraham Show. Back with more right after this on 730-1039. Yeah.
Read the sign. Beware of dog. Tom Abraham is back.
Is this a different one or is this the same one? They all sound the same to me.
this is the one they had loaded in. I'm going to play.
This is big time here
no,
or don't?
No.
Who is this?
This is too
little
short,
people?
I think.
Too short, yeah. Big Time, Too Short, Tupac, Biggie Smalls, Smalley Biggs.
You ready for...
Look at me. I know all these guys.
You ready for the Gilligan's Island remake?
Yeah. Let me hear that. Now, this was the bull we bumped with the last time?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what it was. See if it's... Are they ripping off Gilligan's Island? That's got a little... Let me hear it. Do you have Gilligan's Island queued up or no?
No, I don't. I can work on that for you.
It does have a little bit of Gilligan's Island in there. Do you listen to that stuff? Or no?
Selectively. I listen to everything.
Really?
Absolutely everything. But if you twisted my arm and something I'm going to put on, you know, that I would choose if I had to listen to one thing, it's more along the lines of rock music.
Dirty Dave hit the text window. He says, I dated girls less high maintenance than you, diva dog. Am I high maintenance? I'm a little bit high maintenance. I am a little bit needy, okay? But it's only because I have a desire to be a perfectionist. Let me hear the Gilligans. Let's see see if that sounds like.
Just sit right back and you slow it down.
I'd rather bump with that than bump. Hey, why don't we do a throwback Thursday with old TV themes? Someday.
You can get Wikipedia on that this weekend if you want, or this week.
Oh, yeah, see, anyone ain't part of that. TCU beat Texas A&M. That knocked Texas A&M out of the tournament?
I think so.
Or no? Are they out? Does that knock them out or no? I don't know if that knocks them out or not, or if A&M is still in that thing. The people need to talk to each other before they play these games, because TCU had a purple top on and Texas A&M had their maroon top on, or their burgundy top, and it looks like a beer league softball game or something. You know what I mean? When these guys roll like that. All right, so A&M is out. Cal State Fullerton is out. All right, so you got TCU's 1-1. Louisville and Florida are 1-0 each. They play tonight, Louisville and Florida. And so that gives you a little bit of that deal. High maintenance, huh? I'm a little bit needy, but it's only because of a desire to do as good a job as I can possibly do. Bamazak says, sounds pretty good from studio. How much did Arky eat, Bamazak? Yeah, Bamazak, I got a bone to pick with you, my man. Telling Arky to keep eating or something. Spending my money. Bamazak, spending my money. Thanks, Bamazak. Do you think we really need to, you know, encourage Arky to eat more? And let me tell you something. That dude falls out of his chair choking on a bone or something. Ain't nobody giving him no mouth-to-mouth. I just get a backhoe, dig a hole, and roll his ass into it. I mean, nobody's even doing chest compressions on that guy. Thanks, Bamazak. All right, we'll be back. Tom Abraham Show. Greg Wyshynski is next on 730-1039.